Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you may be listening to this. This is the Macko and Cos podcast, the post-Super Bowl edition of the podcast. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. Is it really a post-Super Bowl edition, or is it just a Super Bowl recap? Doesn't it have to be the night of to be post-Super Bowl?
I don't know. Actually, I have no idea.
I'm sorry to start with the technicality.
Yeah, but way to get this started. Yes, it's time for an exciting podcast with corrections. I don't know, Bob. How do you want to do it?
Well, let's call it Super Bowl. Let's call it post-Super Bowl because, Maddie,
yeah.
Because I started off by throwing you under the bus,
yeah.
I'm going to open up the door to kindness and say,
you.
Nah, let's just roll with your
thing. Green tea was ready for you when you got here.
It was.
Yeah. So before we get into Super Bowl ads, Justin Timberlake, Leafs lose 4-1 to Boston, and we're at Super Bowl parties. How full are you? I'll give you examples of how I'm still really full. I want to start with something really creepy that happened this morning to me.
All right.
So when I'm doing the morning show, and before this incarnation, I've done it a lot in the past. I've done hundreds and hundreds of morning shows. I'm used to leaving that door at 4:50 in the morning.
The front door to your luxurious penthouse.
That's right. And the one thing you're just not used to is seeing another human being. When you do the same thing every day, it's always the same thing. Hallway's empty. Elevator's always right there. Get into the car, go to work. It's not even 5 o'clock in the morning when I'm doing this. I open the door, and immediately to my left, there is someone standing there slowly walking. And it's a security guard. And I'm like, hey. And he doesn't say anything. And he just keeps walking down the hallway and then doesn't even get in the elevator, goes in the door where the stairs are, and I never see him again. And I was totally creeped out. Because A, this is not normal, it's not what I see, but B, if there is a security guard wandering around the hallway at 4:50 in the morning, what happened to get security guard there?
Okay, so I got questions.
Yeah.
Is it standard practice for the security guard to go through the building, monitor floor by floor?
No, we don't have a security guard. It's one of the reasons why I picked this building. It's less overhead. There is no concierge. You know, there is no 24-hour security guard. No, I have never seen this in my life.
Now, is it possible he wasn't a security guard for this building? He was just a guy who was a security guard, and he was going to work.
If that is the case, it's not someone who lives here. It is a guest of one of the tenants, and it can only be one of a couple, because walking from one side of the hallway. So yes, that's absolutely a possibility. I can't discount it, but it's something you've never seen. And at 4:50 in the morning, you're a much more fragile human being.
Okay, so now let's go to the more likely scenarios.
Yeah.
Ghost?
What's that?
Ghost? Ghost guard?
Could be ghost guard. I did consider that.
Ghost guard.
Yeah, totally.
Did he talk?
He did not.
Well, there you go. Ghost.
Ghost guard. Right. I never even thought about that. It's like a coast guard, but creepier. Ghost guard.
See, I think if it was a malevolent presence, mm-hmm. probably would have taken you out.
Yeah. Yeah,
so maybe it was like the soul of a dead guard from years past. How new is this building?
18, 19 years old.
So you're not the first tenant here.
I'm the second tenant in this one.
So there could be like a history.
Yeah, ooh.
Yeah.
Like Indian burial ground kind of thing.
Well, every building has a story.
Yes.
Maybe this is part of the story.
Yeah. Ooh, that's true.
Now you need to start asking around, saying, well, you know, when this building was played, you know, maybe, yeah, sure, could be a burial ground of some sort.
Could be a burial ground.
Could have been some terrible furnace-related mishap.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Little Freddy Krueger there.
Freddy Krueger going on.
I don't know what it is about the basement in buildings, but I think we can all agree.
Don't go there.
Just, what do we have basements for? They're only there for scaring people.
No movie has the scene in the basement of the apartment where it's good.
Okay, so here's what I want. I want one of those nice 905 really done up type basements to be haunted.
Yeah.
I want to see that horror movie where you go down and there's drywall up and it's carpeted and there's a ping pong table.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm behind your 40-inch plasma television.
You know what would be great actually is the top part of the house is done up nice. And then you go to the basement and it's covered in cobwebs and it's a dirt floor. Yeah. It'd be so totally incongruous.
Wait a minute, Bob. I just thought about this.
Like the basement in War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
That they're holed up in while they escape the aliens.
Okay. I just thought of this, Bob. The ghost haunting in the fully furnished done Mississauga home.
Yes.
And the ghost comes out and goes, the basement might be finished, but I'm not. Woo! Finished basement ghost killer.
Wait, I've got a name for the movie. Reno Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was the soul of a renovations guy who was actually holed up in the drywall.
Yeah.
Kind of like an Edgar Allan Poe movie. What was the one where he's holed up in the wall? Is it the Cask of Amontillado?
Bob, when it's Edgar Allan Poe, I just go, I don't know, the Raven?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Cask of Amontillado where he gets sealed up behind the wall. But anyway.
I'll believe you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right, so I love it. So, yeah. Reno Man, we're doing this.
And then think
about all the gnarly tricks you could build in. Like, you know, he'd be, you know, skill saws.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I'm writing a horror movie right now, so my brain is just going to creepy places.
Ooh, you're writing a horror movie. That's
I am writing a horror movie. Yeah, I figured, you know, my brain's pretty dark. I might as well put it on paper.
Yeah. By the way, just thinking about this, like older buildings always have like an interesting history.
Always.
You know, back.
That's why I think you have a ghost guard.
Yeah, like 1910 when the hotel was first burnt, was first built, then it burnt down and they built on the exact same spot. But then think of like Liberty Village. What's the story? There used to be a Jamba Juice here in 2009. And then they tore it down and put up this giant condo with, you know, it's floor to ceiling glass. And
haunted Jamba Juice.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
By the way, I think that was fairly creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was creepy.
When you told that story to Landsberg, I'm assuming on the air?
Yeah, I told it to Michael.
Did he throw you under the bus?
Well, he did what he usually does, which is just block. He's like, I don't find it that spooky. I'm like, thank you, Michael. Well, now this story is over. There's ways to, if you don't find it spooky, to make fun. But I don't even know if Michael's paying attention.
You mean like the 7 minutes we just did on it?
Yeah. See, well, look what we just did. We've just created a horror movie.
A franchise, buddy.
A franchise.
That's a franchise.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we'll get the people that did Saw on this. You know, we've mined a lot of territory here from creepy security guard. I got to tell you, though, when I got into my car, I usually my car warm up a little bit. I didn't.
Got the hell out of there?
Oh, I gunned the hell out of there because I assume there's some murderer or someone in the building.
In fact, you know there is.
Yeah.
But I like the way that you assume there was a murderer, so your instinct wasn't wake up my girlfriend and get her out of the place, but it was get to my car as fast as possible. Get the hell out of here.
Ooh, that's a good point. Let's see. Hold on.
Moving along. Super Bowl.
7 minutes and 3 seconds. Edit that part out and go. Okay, let's get a clean in because I'm going to have to cut that out.
So here's what my first thought about the Super Bowl,
yeah.
And there's a million thoughts because it was an amazing game.
Yeah.
And just the NFL can never lose. It has a boring season and an incredible title game.
Yep.
The NFL is just born to win.
Yep.
But what really occurred to me is I thought about Jacksonville and New England and what teams do and what is they crumble before the inevitability of the onslaught.
Yeah.
The second half onslaught. There's like a crazy mythology around it. Ooh, Belichick went back to the room and he and Brady are coming out to get us. And they always do.
Yeah.
And you could see the beginning of it. Two consecutive drives were basically classic Patriots Gronk drives.
Yeah. Gronk.
Gronk, touchdown.
Yeah.
And what Jacksonville did was it folded.
Yeah.
It didn't have the ability to regroup. And even though it had the lead and was doing all kinds of things in the face of the onslaught, it fell apart.
Yeah.
And the Eagles never did. And part of that's composure. Part of that is confidence. And part of that is coaching. And I thought, you know what? Good for them. Because didn't you feel when they took the lead and here's the end?
Oh, yeah.
And they'll wind up winning by a touchdown or two.
We were joking when it was like 22-13 or whatever it was. Or 22-12. 22-12. Thank you. And we're like, man, this is going to stink for Eagle fans in the fourth quarter when they talk about the lead that got away from them.
Right, when it's 49-31.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. That's where you're thinking. There's a lot of takeaways. I think the big one, though, and I hope this bleeds into the rest of the NFL, but I'm sure it won't, is that aggressiveness wins. Now, not what the Falcons did last year, because they just gave two middle fingers to math when they were up 28-3, and they had a great running back in Devonta Freeman. And they're like, no, we're going to let Matt Ryan get sacked and ruin the game for us. But Doug Peterson had a couple fourth down conversion calls. And the first one was on the goal line. And that was near the end of the half. And if you kick the field goal, you're up by 6. Hey, guys, you know what? Great first half. We're up by six.
You're going in as the dog into the game. Yeah. The conventional wisdom is on a neutral field. Take the points.
Take the
You're
points.
You're playing well.
Yeah, and it's fourth down. If you don't get it, you know, momentum goes to New England, and you're only up by three.
And it's the classic play where everyone says the next day, what the hell were they thinking?
Yeah.
That's the moment where they handed the game back over to the Patriots.
Instead, they handed the ball off to two different players, one of them the backup tight end, who played quarterback for the Gators, wait, Florida Gators back in the day, threw to Nick Foles, touchdown. Now it's 22-10, not 18-10.
I think that's an absolute turning point in the game. What I loved about that play, too, is how when Foles leaves his spot in the shotgun formation, yeah, and he drifts over to the right side of the line, but he's still pretending he's, like, talking to the lineman.
Yeah.
So that was subterfuge and acting.
Here's what I want to know. I want to know, just from an acting point of view, what did he say? Like, was did he get into character? He's like, okay, I'm playing the role of quarterback talking to his right tackle in a jocular fashion.
Okay, so don't forget to block for me. Yeah. Don't forget to block.
Don't forget to block for me, who's going to be throwing the ball under wink. Center. Wink, wink, wink. I think we got him. But like that play.
Doug Peterson, is that brilliant? Or is that just craziness that worked? Because if Sean Payton had done it, mm-hmm, and it didn't work, we'd be saying, oh, Sean Payton, here he goes again, outthinking himself. When you pull a move,
yeah,
that brave,
yeah,
is it smart? Or is it just because you can't say it's calculated risk. Mm-hmm. That's a nutty play.
Yes,
it was. That's a nutty play.
It was a nutty play.
Maybe you could say it's a calculated risk. Okay, are you more inclined to think that's brilliant or lucky?
I go with brilliant because against New England, you have to be aggressive.
You think you're right.
And I hope other coaches see that and realize, hey, wait a minute. Tell the punter to sit the bleep down. We're going for it on fourth and two. I hope this, because what this could lead to is if it's more aggressive, more conversion attempts, fewer punts. You know what that is, Bob? That's fun.
You know what I thought was the gutsier call? That was maybe the more creative call, but the pass on fourth down to Zach Ertz that they converted at midfield in a close game as the noose is tightening.
45-yard line. Oh, yeah, 45-yard line. But here's the difference between...
That took guts.
That took guts. But here's why I like the other one more.
You like it or you respect it?
Oh, no, I loved all of it. I respect and loved all of it. Here's why I like the one at the half more. By the time of that second one that you just mentioned, in the fourth quarter, they were down by a point, and you could say, oh, there's still 6-7 minutes left and we've all our timeouts.
And they hadn't really stopped Brady, so it's not like you could say, we'll let our defense get us the ball back.
But that's the thing. I think Doug Peterson, he was smart enough to realize, if I punt the ball, I'm not going to get the ball back.
Until I have maybe a minute and a half left.
So for him, he was aggressive because he realized he had to be. But at the end of the half...
Still would have been a one-score game, though.
I know, but at the end of the half, he was aggressive because he wanted to be. In the fourth quarter, he was aggressive because he needed to be. And it was a ballsy call. They weren't even at midfield. They were on their own, like, 43 or 44-yard line.
It's really weird how... before I move topics, because we should continue to explore this.
Yeah.
If I were to say to you that creativity and ballsiness, fourth down calls, you know, mm-hmm, using Nick Foles to continue to attack the secondary.
Yep.
If I were to say that it was the Eagles who won the day by never taking their foot off the pedal,
yeah,
by making crazy calls, ballsy calls, and essentially outcoaching the opposition, mm-hmm, what were the odds you would have said that going into this game?
Oh, you know, 15-1, 20-1. Like,
nobody,
yeah,
would have ever said Doug Peterson is going to outcoach Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, no one saw that game coming. No one saw 1,100 yards. And you're right. No one saw Doug Peterson outcoaching Belichick. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
So credit to him. So let's talk a bit about Nick Foles here, because I'm fascinated by this performance. It's the performance that none of us expected. Mm-hmm. We all thought eventually the Foles train, you know, it's going to derail.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of nice games in the playoffs, but...
He had one nice game.
You're right. He had a good game and a terrific game.
Yeah, it had a good second half, a good, unspectacular second half against Atlanta.
But if you look at the body of work since he took over the job from Carson Wentz, pretty unimpressive.
Yes.
With a couple of really nice spikes.
Yes.
But that game was masterful.
Mm-hmm.
And he was throwing it through a window.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. And Chris Collinsworth was beside himself with joy. But he should have been. When he was thrown into crazy coverage, it was either ballsy or brilliant, or both.
And that's the only way you're going to beat New England. And it was. And the most impressive stat for Foles, and there's a bunch, and, you know, the interception, that wasn't even his fault. The ball, Alshon Jeffrey knocked it up.
Yeah, crazy, crazy carom. Yeah.
Nick Foles in the NFC Championship game in the Super Bowl was like 21 of 25 on third down. That's impressive.
That's the number.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, those are the things that New England usually tidies up. That's the bend, don't break aspect to, the, to the New England defense is, sure, they'll get themselves in trouble, but when there's that key stop you got to make on a third and long, they make it.
Yeah.
And time and time again, the Eagles just found ways to keep the chains moving. And nobody saw that coming. So here's my question about Nick Foles, not to take this too far away from the game.
No.
How much faith do you have in him now as a bona fide NFL starter? Because he just had one of the best Super Bowl performances ever.
Yeah, he did.
Ever.
Here's the problem for Nick Foles, that we remember Joe Flacco.
Right.
Joe Flacco was a good quarterback with Baltimore. Some spikes. Then that playoff run, deep pass to Torrey Smith, now an Eagle, against the Broncos to get them to the Super Bowl. And then they beat the 49ers. And then Baltimore gives Joe Flacco like $22, $23 million. And then that offensive lineman gone, Anquan Boldin gone, that guy who's a contributor gone. And that's the thing with Nick Foles. Had that one great year in 2013 in Chip Kelly's very odd offense. Then teams caught on, injuries, other things. He gets stuck with Jeff Fisher. Hey, you're going to look worse.
Makes his way back to Andy Reid. Andy Reid has a way with quarterbacks.
Yeah, or this case now with Doug Peterson and, you know, and was put into the system and look great. Okay, here's the thing. He deserves a chance.
He deserves to be in the league.
Yes.
I think he's probably a good backup. That's what we've seen. And if nothing else, he has the ability to have a backup's mentality.
Yeah.
I don't know that you should ever give a big contract to a quarterback until you really assess their offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Could he have done what he did without Philadelphia's offensive line? This is a silly question. It's a rhetorical question. Of course, the answer is no. But, man, they were good.
They were really good.
They were really, really good.
Yep.
They gave him a lot of opportunities to do things.
Well, if you're Philly, and you're right, if you're Philly, you trade Nick Foles. A, you're never going to get more for him. And if Alex Smith gets $71 million in guaranteed money,
right,
there's going to be a home for Nick Foles. Maybe Jacksonville's thinking, we can't afford Kirk Cousins, but we could bring in Nick Foles. But here's the thing with Philly. Philadelphia has the single greatest weapon in the NFL, even greater maybe than Brady and Belichick. For the next 2 years, they've got the guy who is going to win the MVP. Carson Wentz is going to make $8 million and $9 million, considering bad quarterbacks get $15 and up, considering Matt Stafford gets $26 million. Philadelphia needs to trade Nick Foles right now, because for the next 2 years, like the Seattle Seahawks, like Golden State before they signed Steph to his latest deal, they got a star. And they're not paying him anything.
I think you nailed it there with the Seattle Seahawks comparison. Is that you
three-year run.
They had Russell Wilson cheap on the dollar.
Yep.
For pennies on the dollar. And you know that's not going to last.
Nope.
So I think you're 1,000% right with this. I was happy, though, just in general. Like that's one of those nice Super Bowl stories.
Oh, yeah. Who's rooting for New England? I mean, I was driving to my Super Bowl party. Here's what I heard. Tom Brady say, when I went to my first Super Bowl, it was a dream come true. Great, you've now had seven more dreams come true. Get the hell out of here.
Okay, I want to talk about Brady, but first, one of my last thought on Nick Foles, because I want to amend the last thing I said.
Sure.
It is a nice Super Bowl story until he's a Buffalo Bill.
Oh, boy.
I'm doing threat assessment. Which bad quarterback are we going to overpay for? And now I have to add Nick Foles to the
poor
list.
Poor Nick Foles. When the first story of how his arm strength isn't there. Okay. Can we say once again, maybe like...
We need some petulant wide receivers to come in so they can start complaining he can't get the ball downfield.
Is Jim Kelly the greatest quarterback ever just to have that career there? That career there, and that's... Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's actually a really good sidebar conversation. God. That's a good one for another day. Tom Brady, you know what really jumped out at me about Brady is... I mean, he didn't have the best game. It's really weird. Like, only he can... You can say he didn't have the best game when he's putting up record numbers of
505 yards,
right.
Three touchdowns with not much help from a running game.
Right. And Brandon Cooks goes down.
Yeah.
So a key part of the offense is not available to you in the second half.
Yep.
I think we're not talking enough about that today. I think that was one of the key turning points in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I really did.
Yeah, losing Cooks was...
100%.
Yeah. Also, by the way, it needs to be said.
So
Brady.
Like, how do we assess his performance? Because there were times that he didn't look as sharp as he could. He put up 500 yards.
Yes, and Philadelphia has a very good defense.
Very good.
You know, they didn't look at it against the Super Bowl. So a lot of his passes fluttered, and yet still found a way to find guys that were wide open. The greatness of Tom Brady is he put up those numbers against that defense without a great running attack, and you can still say it wasn't his best day. His offensive line had an unbelievable day. I know he got strip sacked, but he was in that pocket for a while.
Didn't he complete something like 14 in a row when they lost to the Giants?
I'd have to go back and look. I'm not sure.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So this is what was fascinating about New England. We can talk about what they did or didn't do.
Yeah.
But considering that Matt Patricia's gone, considering that Josh McDaniels is gone, considering after the ESPN article that maybe there's trouble in the hen house, maybe there isn't.
And now Malcolm Butler and...
What's up with that?
His teammates were not happy with Belichick.
What do you think? I don't like to speculate because people feel pretty cavalier about saying, well, maybe he did X, Y, and Z. I don't know.
No,
but it does feel like it had to be something. Was that strategy not to put him in the game?
Here's the weird thing. Eric Rowe, the guy, the cornerback who replaced Malcolm Butler, found out a couple hours before. So it wasn't like something had been brewing throughout the week. And here's a crazy stat. No defensive player played more snaps for New England than Malcolm Butler. He played 97% of the snaps. He started and played in the AFC Championship game. There was no talk of him being hurt or injured. He was not on any injury report. It was all dominated by Gronk. So what happened 12 hours before the start of the Super Bowl?
You did the morning show, and I'm assuming you talked to a bunch of insiders and experts.
No one knows. We had Dominic Foxworth on, former cornerback, former head of the NFLPA. He had no idea. No one does.
Does everyone agree it must have been a something, though? That it couldn't have been strategy? It had to be a reaction to something?
I mean,
I haven't heard an intellectual defense of it.
I haven't heard it either. And
you could play him fewer snaps, but to play him no snaps.
And to play him on special teams, but not corner.
That's the other thing.
What?
If he was injured, if they were worried about him not being able to perform, he wouldn't have been on the field.
Yeah, they would have deactivated him. And there was a shot of him during God Bless America where he was in tears and his teammates were consoling him. And when I first saw that shot, I'm like, oh, wait, were those players crying because of Brandon Cooks? And then because I wasn't watching the screen the whole time. And then someone explained what that was. I have no answer. And this won't shock you, Bob. Bill Belichick, not exactly been very forthright about it.
I believe his exact quote was, I made the decisions that I thought gave us the best chance to win.
Yeah. Oh, Bill, stop it with the pillow talk.
You know, it's his run. Like, this is the kind of thing where you would say, I wonder if he's going to lose the room. Like, you think about the play calling in Seattle and, you know, are they going to lose the room after they blew it in the Super Bowl? Right.
Yeah.
You can't say, will Belichick lose the room, because he would just lose the room.
Yeah, he's like, oh, are you not happy?
Gone.
Like, he's like Homer Simpson. You're cut. Wendell, cut. I loved your hustle. You're cut.
And now the best part of any coach's job, the cuts.
Yeah, that one's going to be like, that story's going to linger. That story is going. And you know, New England media is going to say, that's the very reason we lost. It didn't help.
It certainly didn't help. I don't know. Look, they had a missed field goal. They had a missed point after.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of small things that New England beat itself. And I don't know that we're saying that enough because we're so excited about what Philly did.
Yeah.
But New England made a bunch of dumb mistakes, which they normally don't. Come on, that missed.
I know. Yeah.
When you can't stop a team on fourth down.
Yeah.
When you give up, when you miss an easy field goal mm-hmm. and drill it off of the upright.
Yep.
You're begging to lose.
Those are mistakes. I mean, their defense really wasn't great all year. I know they didn't give up a lot of points, but they gave up a lot of yards.
They didn't tackle particularly well.
No.
You saw J.H.I. a lot of times would be stood up after 3 yards and he'd wind up getting five.
Well, if we're talking offensive line for a second, LeGarrette Blount's 21-yard touchdown run, he made one nice cut, but beyond that, he was not touched at all.
Yeah.
Like, that offensive line pushed around New England quite a bit in that game. Damn!
Okay, so let's go back to this idea of what this means for the Patriots, because I don't think it means anything to... There are no legacy questions to address here.
Oh, no.
Zero.
There's never been a team that has been less disappointed about losing a big game than New England. They're like, oh, no, we lost. Oh, this really sucks.
Have you ever done this, Matt? Have you ever gone to a restaurant and you order a whole bunch of food? You're with a group of people.
Yeah.
And you order several plates.
Yeah.
And the wait staff forgets to bring you one of them until the meal's almost done.
Yeah.
And everyone says, I'm kind of full already.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know,
oh, yeah.
At the beginning of the meal, you would be disappointed. Yes. If you had one plate coming and they forgot it, you'd be going nuts over it.
Yeah, but by the end of the night when you're finished, yeah, you're finishing your last
full,
bite. Yeah.
You've had a couple drinks, some nice conversations, and then they're like, oh, we forgot the steamed broccoli.
That's a great analogy. Yes, the New England losing the Super Bowl, that was their steamed broccoli. It would have been nice if we got it, but moving onwards and upwards.
But I do feel watching yesterday's game, there's enough material to go into this offseason. Kind of like the Cavs, where eventually you just get to a point where every dynasty has to end.
Yes.
Two of your key architects, we know they're on their way out.
Yep.
Brady is 40. Mm-hmm. He's also the MVP. It's hard to feel bad about a quarterback returning who is the MVP
and threw for 500 yards.
And threw for 500 yards in the championship game. It's more the Belichick question's the question. Is that unit still going to be the Patriots, or is it starting to change?
God, I hope it's starting to change just to see something different.
Tell me about it.
It's not even, it's not anti-Patriots. It's anti, you know, just the status quo. That's all it is there for me. I mean, I was rooting for Philly because one of my closest friends flew from Australia to go to the Super Bowl with his dad.
That's Tom Longhurst?
My buddy Tom Longhurst.
Tom Longhurst. Do you want to tell the Tom scouting for the New England for Philadelphia story?
When Tom was Tom pretended he was a defensive coordinator for the Laurier Golden Hawks, where he played football, and he wrote a letter to Rich Kotite and the Philadelphia Eagles saying, here are some plays I think you guys should run.
Wrote it on Wilfrid Laurier masthead.
Yes.
On their stationery.
Yeah, he's nuts. He once whipped a remote control and it implanted in the wall because Kerwin Bell, who went on to play with the Argonauts, and the Colts beat the Eagles. On another occasion, someone came into their university house and said, hey, what's going on? And Tom looked at this stranger. And instead of being polite, you know, like what humans do to other humans when they don't meet them, they try to be polite. He's just like, listen, friend, you're not allowed to talk. He banned a stranger from talking because the Eagles were losing in a regular season game. So, yeah, he was nuts.
I watched him get revved up once. The Eagles were winning, but they just wouldn't give Brian Westbrook the ball enough. Mm-hmm. They kept giving it to Deuce Staley.
Yeah.
And I just watched the steam coming out of his ears. And I was thinking, you're winning.
Yeah.
You're winning. Yeah. You're in nice shape. That was actually, that might have been the first time I met Tom.
Yeah.
So anyway, context to it. A lot of passionate Eagles fans out there.
Oh, yeah.
Gareth Wheeler.
Mike Hogan.
Our dear listener, Chelsea Darlington.
Everyone's a bleeping Eagles fan. Like, there's another producer, Joe Narsa. We had a guy doing updates today, like replacement Haffey. Tim Haffey wasn't in. And he was wearing an Eagles hat. I'm convinced. If you're a certain age, Randall Cunningham turned you on to the Eagles. If you're younger, Michael Vick in that one crazy Michael Vick year with the Eagles.
And if you're older, Ron Jaworski. That was when I actually, as a kid growing up, had a number 7 Eagles jersey. Of course, it wasn't really an Eagles jersey. It was just made to look that way at Towers.
It was sort of like the Hikies instead of the
It was
the
like
Nikes.
The Ogles.
Yeah. Hey, that's a nice Ronex. What time is it?
Exactly. Yeah. So I had my Eagles jersey.
Yeah.
And a big number 7 on it because Jaworski was the Polish rifle.
That's right.
And that's I aspired to that.
Yep. Yep.
And they wound up losing to, I think it was Oakland?
Yes, yeah, so they lost to the Raiders.
Lost to the Raiders
first time
that was the Jim Plunkett year.
Yeah, the first time the Super Bowl winner was a wild card. Was who lost.
Harold Carmichael was on that team. Yep. Wes Montgomery was on that team.
So we'll get off X's and O's for a second.
Okay.
How's your Super? What did you do? Where'd you watch it?
Ooh, good question. I was planning to watch it at home. I was invited to Landsberg's place, but we shot it down because we had a couple long days, been working a lot. We thought, you know what? No time for chit-chat.
Yeah.
My little nephew, he plays single-A hockey, and he had a championship game in a tournament, so we drove out to Richmond Hill, watched the Vaughn Raiders. Congratulations, champions of their tournament.
Nice job.
And my sister-in-law said, do you guys want to come back afterwards? We got wings and all this kind of stuff. So we said, yeah, sure, why not? We'll catch a half there. Maddie, the deluge of food. Every 5 minutes, it was like the Royal Rumble. Uh-huh. Every couple minutes, just a new delicious snack came out of the kitchen.
I hear that.
Wings, chili, nachos, spring rolls, salad.
Salad
made the trip.
Yeah.
It was insane. I had the most delicious chili. Boy, did I ever enjoy that. My daughter played Connect Four with her aunt.
Yep.
And me and Greg, my nephew's father, just sat there and cheered. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
How about you?
We had Philly cheesesteaks.
Ooh, good touch.
Yep. three different types of wings, potato wedges, obviously tons of pizza, chips, nachos, all that kind of stuff, ice cream sandwiches, donuts, Timbits.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. There was, yeah.
You didn't do the William Perry, though, did you?
We didn't. What we usually have done in the past is we've done a weight gain contest. You arrive, you weigh yourself, whoever gains the most weight, wins a trophy. We didn't do it this year, and I think a lot of guys, they feel shame about what they weigh, so they don't want to do it. I don't know.
It's not the ending. It's the beginning that's the problem. Yeah,
I was gung-ho for it, but I will say with our crew, we don't eat as much as we used to. Now, we had too much food, and shout out to my buddy Tim Morris, who hosted this year. But at the end of the night, we saw all the food still there. We're like, oh, my God, like just so much. And here's – but.
Your crew's an NFL crew.
Yeah.
We should point that out. A lot of people who grow up in our country, they tend to have hockey crews. You grow up and all your buddies, you know, follow your team, you're into the Stanley Cup, whatever. But your crew that you grew up in, a bit uncommon in our parts, was a NFL first crew.
Oh, yeah, 100%. NFL first and every other sport, you know, for many years, a distant second. So it was, you know, it was a great time. Same group for, you know, we've been doing this since, you know, like the Bills' first Super Bowl against the Redskins. So the 1991 season, 92 Super Bowl, we've been doing this party. That's a long time.
You're like those guys who go golfing once a year, every year, no matter what, and nothing can cancel that trip.
Oh, no. Much to many of the wives' chagrin. But here's how full I was. You know me. I'm decadent. I don't say no. I don't feel guilty.
And you like to make the most out of your opportunities.
Ding, ding, ding. And I have a sweet tooth. Landsberg brought in just a Willy Wonka's chest of baked goods.
This morning?
This morning. And they sat right next to my console the whole day. And it's just, she's just wiggling her little, oh, look at how good that looked. And by the way, I just felt lecherous just saying that. Now I feel guilt. I feel I need a
You made map. It sound like the Eclairs were, you were in a strip club or something.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And I didn't touch a thing.
Really?
I just drank water with lemon. Thinking, well, this will completely balance out yesterday.
This is my third cup of green tea today.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing says it's time to flush things out like the.
It's time to thin the old broth a little bit, Maddie.
Yeah. Any final points for the Super Bowl before we move on?
Justin Timberlake, I liked what he was wearing.
Yeah, I thought he was meh. Do more Prince. I don't
know. No. The Prince thing, that was an infamia. No, it was not. No.
Dude, no, but like. Dude.
Although when everything went purple outside.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
Like, but that was
I wanted
cool.
to hear Let's Go Crazy and do it right. I wanted to hear him do Let's Go Crazy.
It was so small that it wasn't really a tribute. It was like a little nod of the head.
It was a nod. Bleep you, Justin. And this is not old man cause. I thought Lady Gaga was great. I miss Bruno Mars.
Springsteen was great. Springsteen even Tom Petty, rest in peace, was great.
Katy Perry put on a hell of a show when Missy Elliott came out. But Justin Timberlake was just boring.
As my wife, who is the funniest person I know, said, he was singing about bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
She goes, I want Left Shark back.
Yes.
Bring Left Shark back.
Yeah, 100%. My message to the NFL owners, I know ratings were down, so maybe tell your coaches and offensive coordinators, be like Doug Peterson, be more aggressive, that'll make the game more interesting, that'll bring more fun, that'll bring more people watching the game. Be like Doug. I can't believe I'm saying that on Monday morning.
Okay, so let's just do a final thought.
Yeah.
Final thought on the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I walked away thinking the NFL can't lose. It can take its hits. But in the end, it's still the NFL.
Yep.
And for much as we want to talk about how it's on its way out, mm-hmm. and I've been, you know, I've said it plenty in different ways.
Yep.
But watching that championship game, it forces you to remember this is the once and future king of North American sports.
Well said, Bob. You know what you also can't lose at? You can't lose if Jeff Pollock is your lawyer. He is my lawyer. He's your lawyer. Jeff Pollock. You can contact him at jeffpollock.com. The phone number, it's a pizza number, 416-777-0088. You will get the personal touch because it's not a big, giant, fancy corporate law office. It's not like L.A. Law. It's your mom-and-pop law office there. They've been around for ages. The guy's got a hell of a record. He did my will, and I was not in the corner. crying and screaming about the inevitability that maybe one day I'll die, because just that sort of personal touch. So 416-777-0088. Jeff Pollock.
Matt had a little smile come over his face as he realized he had a sweet segue lined up.
The moment you said the NFL can't lose.
You had this little grin just crack on your face, this tiny little note in your mind you were feeling pretty good about yourself.
I will see if I can find a segue for our other sponsor, Seat Giant. We'll do that a little bit later in the show.
So let's talk about the Leafs and the loss in Boston. You had mentioned going into the weekend on the last pod that you were really curious to see how they would play because, that's the most likely playoff first-round matchup they'll face, given how the standings are. B, Boston's been really, really good over the last 4 to 6 weeks. And see, I guess you could even say historically Boston, for whatever reason, over the last 10 years, has been a bit of a measuring stick for the Leafs. That Leafs feels maybe a little less true as it might have been a few years ago, but nobody likes to lose 4-1 in Boston.
No, they don't. And here's my thought on the game. That was a PSA.
Okay.
That was a PSA. It's like, hey, hockey fans, you like what's going on in Vegas? That's a hell of a story. And man, look at what Stevie Eiserman has done in Tampa. They're doing a great job. But don't forget that Boston has been the best team in hockey. Do you know in their last 21 games, and I am cherry picking, in the last 21 games, only once have they not got a point. They've gone 16-1-4 in their last 21 games. Saturday night was a PSA. Make sure you read to your children. Make sure you recycle. And holy bleep, here comes the Bruins.
If I may quote the great LL Cool J, don't call it a comeback.
Yeah.
We've been here for years.
Oh, my God.
They looked really good. And Tuukka Rask, there are so many good goalies in the NHL. Yeah. But sometimes you forget a guy. Like Tuukka Rask just flew under the radar for a little while.
Yeah.
But he was one of the best and elite goaltenders. And if he's going to play like that, that's going to be big trouble for anybody who faces them.
Yeah, Bergeron's line shut down Matthews. Tough night.
And that's a tough one if you're looking into a 7-game matchup, because you can't win a playoff series unless Matthews is your best forward.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
I don't think. It would have to be fluky or injury-based or something to beat a team in a playoff series without Matthews dominating night after night.
Yeah.
And so that Bergeron, the Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak line.
Yeah, and there was no Marchand. He was still out.
Exactly.
So, and Zdeno Chara. Okay, you know what? I'm tired of Brady and LeBron getting all my reckless speculation on steroids. How about you, Chara? You're like 41 and you're like 6'11" and you're still playing well. You're playing like 23 minutes a night. Steroids.
So,
wild speculation.
I like the way you called that. It could be steroids, or it sounds like steroids.
Not based on anything. Alleged.
You've heard about his workout regimen. You know he's obsessive, right?
Yeah.
Every athlete works out, but some of them take it to obsessive levels.
Yeah.
Ray Allen was that way.
Yeah.
I heard a story. Someone played with Chara 1 year and said, all year long, the only thing they saw him do that wasn't absolutely strict and to order in terms of his regimen was one night they saw him have a chicken wing.
He's like Tom Brady.
He is like Tom Brady.
It's like, by the way, a great tweet. Someone tweeted out, Tom Brady's going to rage eat or depression eat an extra almond tonight. I really like that tweet.
That's good.
Sure.
So here's what worries me more than losing to Boston, because you can win or lose on any given night to anybody in the NHL.
Yeah.
Is that they didn't look great on the PK.
Nope.
And who usually sits on the PK? Roman Pollock.
Yeah.
And you could already see Babcock feathering the bed for the Travis Dermott is going to get demoted conversation.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I don't
or
know.
Or Connor Carrick.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Connor Carrick. I don't know if you saw this. At one point early in the third period, Babcock went into his breast pocket, grabbed out his wallet, and he opened it up. And there was a little wallet-sized photo of Pollock. And he looked at it and sort of pet it like, you know, sort of pet it like George was with a rabbit. And, that's what it feels like. It's like Pollock's coming back.
I have said this a bunch over the last couple pods.
Yep.
It feels like they've got the best lineup they can have right now in terms of health and how it's distributed over four lines, who's available.
Yep.
Is Babcock going to mess with it because of one bad night where the penalty kill didn't look very good.
Let's find out tonight. They're playing the Ducks. I'm curious about
it. Have you seen the lines today? I haven't seen the lines.
And it is sad. I first thing I do on Twitter now is I'll type in Mark Masters or Kristen Shelton just to see what is the lineup combinations.
I have a feeling that we're about to get angry again. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I just have that feeling. There's all the benchmarks, though. Like they say that the bees in an ecosystem are like the canary in a coal mine. They're the ones that tell you how everything else is doing.
Yeah.
When he starts saying, Travis Dermott, love his skill set, love the opportunities he creates.
Don't love the shots against.
Don't love the shots against. You know what that tells me?
Yeah.
Back to the AHL.
I'm Travis Dermott or Carrick. I'm like, Mike, I don't like the fact you've got one playoff series win in the last like 8 years. They would never say that.
I don't think they would say that. No. So I don't think it'll be Dermott. I do think it'll be Carrick that would go down. But they partner him back up with Pollock because in theory, that would lead to shot suppression, although things called facts get in the way of that idea.
Okay, I'll say this. If I have to have one, I'd rather Pollock come back than mess with the Mitch Marner, Kadri, Patrick Marleau line. Leave that alone. Leave Leo on the fourth.
Leave Kapanen on the fourth.
If you're going to bring back Pollock, fine. Hey, coach, I get it. You need your fix. You got to get your injection of veteran. I'm not going to tell you don't do it. Just leave the second and fourth line alone.
They are in a uniquely situated spot in that they're not going to fight for a playoff spot. They're probably going to wind up, in 2 months exactly where they are today.
Yeah.
Let the kids work through this.
Yes.
If they start messing around, and I'm not getting mad. It sounds like I'm getting mad, but only because I know this could happen.
Yeah.
I'm not reacting to anything per se. But Babcock at some point has to just say, if this is my most skilled lineup, if this is my best and most talented lineup, then I've got to let them learn to play together.
Yeah.
And grow into their spots.
And that's the key, is the growing. Because there's going to be a lot of talk, and by the way, the station I work for, we're going to be guilty of it because we love speculation, but you listeners, you eat it up. We have no choice. But the main thing the Leafs need is time, and that's so boring. But
because you live game to game.
You live game to game. But
the problem is the news cycle doesn't like time.
Yeah. And
time is measured in terms of shifts.
Yeah. And
not stretches of 10 games.
And what you need is Marner, Nylander, and Matthews, and Riley, and not Gardner as much. He's a little bit older. And Dermott, all these guys, just 3 years older. And maybe Liljegren and what he is. Like, that's the thing, is the biggest thing that's going to help the Maple Leafs. And this is a good thing because the talent's all here. It's just time. You're not getting that supreme needle mover at the deadline. It's not happening.
I see this on all sides, though. The more traditional bunch, the ones who point to the importance of veterans and how you got to play the right way, and Babcock has certainly been in that camp at various times. They seem to have this issue that they don't like time because they don't want to watch the kids go through the mistakes.
Yeah.
That drives them crazy.
Yeah.
The other group, the analytics committee, is sitting there saying, well, if this is our best lineup, we got to put them there. And I think they're championship contenders now.
Yeah.
They're not.
No.
They're not.
No.
Because as good as they can look on one night, they can look just as bad 5 nights later.
Yeah.
And that's what a young team does as they figure it out. So all these, hey, this is the Leafs' window now. They've calmed down a little bit. But to start the year, it was an awful lot of, hey, I think that this team could compete now. And the Leafs got to honor that. They don't have to honor that.
Yeah.
Matt, I now call this the Matt Cause Time Initiative. I love it.
Yeah.
Be like Cause, the leaf blowing in the wind.
That's right. Just get in that river and let it wherever it takes you. By the way, speaking of water.
Yeah.
The Atlantic. Mm-hmm. How's that for a segue?
Are you going to turn this into a seat giant thing?
I'm not, actually.
Okay, because I thought if you pull the Atlantic into buying seats, I'd be impressed. Can you do it?
Oh, of course I can.
Go for it.
Oh, absolutely I can.
And wait, you're not allowed to call this an Atlantic Division thing either.
I'm not at all.
You have to make it about the ocean. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Here's how good Seat Giant is. Whether you were on the Titanic going across the Atlantic or you're going to see the Leafs taking on the Anaheim Ducks tonight, Seat Giant is your one-stop ticket shop. SeatGiant.ca. Yes, they even refunded money to Billy Zane, who was the true hero of Titanic. People don't know that. But for all your sports tickets, concert ticket needs, go to SeatGiant, SeatGiant.ca. And here's the important thing. It's in Canadian dollars. The company is a Canadian company. You're not going to get some crazy extra charges where you don't realize how much you're spending until it's too late. And even more important, Use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout to save money. Just click the add button, then the review order button, and your discount code will show up before confirming your order. And remember, every time you do that, Bob and I get a little bit of money, which is good because the podcast costs money to put together. So everyone wins. SeatGiant.ca.
I thought that was great, Matt.
Thank you.
I would not have anticipated that. Saying that you could get a seat on the Titanic through our sponsor.
It's true. Look
it up.
Would have
worked?
Google it. If you Google seatgiant.ca and how many people on the Titanic. Also, everyone who used Seat Giant survived on the Titanic. They were sitting there on the boats wondering, you know, what was going on with that guy that looks like Leonardo DiCaprio. It's a popsicle, but it's true. 100%.
Your ability to play with the truth is downright Trumpian. That was pretty spectacular.
By the way, Chara, steroids. Plain with the truth. SeatGiant.ca. Here's my one thing. Like, I know the Atlantic stinks. Ah, the Atlantic stinks. Oh, the Atlantic's horrible. Yeah, except for this. The two best teams, maybe the entire NHL, are both in the Atlantic.
Right.
It's top heavy. Ooh, 80s. Ready for bad 80s group? 80s joke?
Yeah, go for it.
Much like Dolly Parton, the Atlantic. It's top heavy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
No, it worked.
80s.
It worked. It was an 80s you reference. Know?
Yeah.
I thought it needed to be cheesier.
Oh, well.
Charo.
You know what's funny? I was thinking Charo as well. We go from Chara to Charo, the Atlantic. It's pretty stacked on top.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if you're going to go to hell,
yeah.
I think you did a much better job of it that time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How much time? Speaking of time, how much time do we have left?
Oh no, we got another like 8-9 minutes.
Are we pretty good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right, you got anything you want to cover?
For
me, it was a very Super Bowl-y type weekend. So
yeah,
I didn't watch Toronto play Memphis.
No,
we won.
Yeah, the whole weekend was overwhelmed by the Super Bowl. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, if the game was boring, then the Raptors would be come and play. Hey, they beat up on Portland. DeRozan was efficient, 35 points and like, you know, 20 shots or whatever. They beat Memphis. DeRozan and Lowry didn't have heavy minutes, taxing on them. The biggest thing from the NBA.
More excited about the fact that DeLon Wright looked so good.
Yeah, DeLon Wright looks great.
He's the Devin Travis of the Raptors.
Yes.
If he can stay healthy, then he's the guy who contributes and helps to hold the thing together.
Let's face it. The biggest Raptor news was LeBron James saying, please take us off national TV, as they got stomped again over the weekend.
Now, is this psychology or is he just genuinely frustrated?
Well,
like, is he trying to motivate them?
No idea.
Or is he just angry and lashing out? Because we've seen him do both.
I think he's angry and lashing out because he knows he's gone. It's like if you rent a car. Well, you won't know this. For the listeners, Bob, you can check out for the next minute. When you rent a car and if you actually get the insurance, well, then you can beat the crap out of the car. What do you care about? You know, soon you're just going to return it and walk away. That's LeBron. He knows he's leaving Cleveland. He could say what he wants and whatever, and he doesn't care. So that's LeBron James.
So this goes back to, I wanted to defend the idea of overpaying for Tyreek Evans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You mentioned
Tyreek Evans. I mentioned
Tyreek
this in the last. Well, just because he's available.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who else could be available. And you know how it is when you get to trade deadline. You talk about the names you know about.
Yeah.
But they're all in play.
Yeah.
Everybody's in play. Everybody is always in play.
Yep.
If you think you can be just a little bit better in the spirit of Monty Burns, mm-hmm. I would give it all up, Homer, for just a little more.
Yeah.
So because I know he's out there and he's a shooting guard who, you know, he is a stat stuffer in a lot of ways. He's a guy who scores on a bad team, but he also scores from deep.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives you an insurance policy against Kyle Lowry, whom, even though he's resting this year more than he has, we've seen him break down in the playoffs before. He just plays that hard physical game. And I just really like the idea of somebody who can help give the two stars, and I believe DeLon Wright's one of them, but some of you, Lowry and DeRozan, you've got to be able to let them rest.
Yes.
You've got to, and even in a playoff series, you got to take minutes away from them. But really, it's about the threes. Because you see, like, they take tons of threes, and they miss tons of threes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the reason, then there was the Portland game where they scored 130. Why? They made, like, 18 of 40.
Yeah,
they were
crazy hot.
Number. But you're right,
and that's going to be true for any team. But for this team that wants to play differently,
yeah. You
know, let's not convince ourselves that they're doing what they can with what they got.
Yeah.
But what they got isn't really built for that modern brand of basketball. Not just yet.
Yeah. It's a shame, by the way, that Kyle Korver isn't on Cleveland, because Kyle Korver always feels like that guy. It's like,
he is
well,
that
they
guy.
Need a because you'll forget some of the names, like some obscure guys, but you always remember Kyle Korver. It's like,
we had that guy back in the day, Del Curry.
Yeah.
Steph's dad.
Yeah.
He was designated, go get that guy. And I think he played for what, 8 teams?
Yeah. So I mean, that's
so what I would overpay to get him just because this is their year, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be overly dramatic. But like you said, the Cleveland thing is imploding.
Yeah,
Boston is only going to be better. There's even talk about them getting freaking Anthony Davis in the offseason. They have a ton of picks and young players. They're not done. They are going to be a super team in the next 2 years. This is the window.
Yep.
What is the point of hanging on to a Jakob Poeltl,
yeah.
who I think is a terrific young player, just to watch them struggle in 2 years, and all of a sudden we replace Cleveland with Boston?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. Yeah, you're right. With the Raptors, swing big. Knock yourself out.
What do you got to lose? Yeah. You accumulated all these talented young players. You don't have any picks anymore.
Yeah.
So you can't do anything with picks. But you got all these really good young players. You can't pay them all in 2 or 3 years.
Nope.
You know, Fred Van Vliet, make him part of a deal. Oh, you can't do that. I love Fred Van Vliet. Well, you know what? I love him too, but you're not going to pay him $6 million a year next year.
Yeah, and that's what the job of the scouts, Masai Ujiri, find the next Fred Van Vliet. Find the DeLon Wrights. Find those guys.
And they've done a magnificent job.
They have. They've done a great job.
Pascal Siakam. Like, guys like that almost never stick.
Yeah.
Right? You know, those guys who are just drafted at the bottom of the first round. And
They have a nice little story arc, but they're not the main character.
The rotation. This rotation has been terrific, and it's even without Norm Powell contributing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he'll be better in the future. Maybe he won't. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there always has to be at least one, you know, Terrence Ross.
Yeah.
There has to be one. So anyway, that's my defensive. And maybe Tyreek Evans isn't the right guy. It just, you need somebody like that, because you know me, I'm the let's see how this thing plays out over 5 years guy. But this is the year that you've been playing it out for.
Yeah.
We're at the end of that cycle. Like, you're either going for it now and then looking to restock, or you're just going to bang your head against the same door.
Yeah, no, you know,
or ceiling is the case.
You convince me. Like, when I hear Tyreek Evans, I get nervous because he's like a lower class version of Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
Right. Mike
you
James.
Know. What's that?
Mike James. Yeah. Excuse me. Mike James. Remember when he scored like 20 a game when he was here?
He did not like to pass the ball.
He really did.
When that ball was in his hands, he did not want that ball out of there.
You know, he could help with a three-guard set. Yeah. He can give you scoring off the bench.
So with the Super Bowl now over.
Okay.
So the focus now is Leafs and Raptors. And the next thing that's going to come into its place, How much of the Winter Olympics? What are you?
Good question.
What are you like? Because like I am not a big Olympic guy. Just because, and it's purely the aesthetic. Skiing. After I've watched three guys ski, I've seen it. The only thing you watch at that point is the bottom right corner to see how close is that skier from the world record or the Olympic record. And by the way, everything I just said about skiing: two man bobsled, four man bobsled, one man luge, two man luge, skeleton. Like all so many of these events, aesthetically, all you're thinking is, don't die, don't die, don't die, don't die. Or when you're being cruel, come on, crash, that'll be cool. Come on, crash, that'll be cool. That's all you're really watching for.
Before I talk about my defense of the Olympics, you know what really hit me this weekend?
Mm.
Every single Olympics, we always have the same conversation in the modern era.
Yeah.
Are the athletes safe? Whether it was London or Sochi, you know, wherever they are, we always say, are the athletes safe? Because the modern world has become an ugly place. Have you heard much conversation about that?
None.
They're in Korea.
None.
They're in Korea.
Yeah.
There's like a madman with nuclear weapons pointed at where they're going to play, and no one's talking about security or safety.
That's because North Korea is sending some of their athletes.
I understand that. But I just found it ironic that we were actually sending them into an area,
mm-hmm.
athletes from all over the world, that is literally a hotspot and terrifying on so many levels. And we don't discuss security or defense in any way.
If North Korea hadn't brokered this thing where they're together, at least some of the athletes, then I think the conversation would be different. But you know we don't have? There, because everything was on Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, Matt, but not to be dark and cynical.
Do it.
But I don't know that North Korea, historically, I don't know that they have that much problem sacrificing some of their own people for their bigger goals.
Excellent point. That is a good point. I think part of it is we don't want to think about that, but Zika was more fun. Nutty Russian rooms in Sochi was more fun.
So
in terms of just like stories, like, you know, like feces in the water.
So we freaked out because the triathletes were going to have to swim through polluted waters.
Yeah.
But we're not freaked out that people are going into a nuclear hotspot.
You know what? We're kind of funny like that. I mean,
because it's too big.
Bob.
It's too big.
If the ball was this much further down.
And by the way, Matt made the finger pinchy move.
Yeah, like centimeter.
Maybe 1 inch move.
If Matt Ryan had thrown a ball 1 inch lower and Julio Jones makes the catch, Then the Eagles don't even get out of their first playoff game. Life's funny. So yeah, we're not really talking about Kim Jong-un. We, you know, focus on other things.
So you've said that you're not really into the Olympics. I'm your classic Canadian. I can't help it. I love it. Mm-hmm. And I grew up loving it. I went to the 76 games in Montreal as a little kid, hung out in the Athletes' Village. I met Rocket Richard in the Velodrome. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Yeah, we were sitting right in front of him, and all, you know, everybody was excited. My dad was like, oh, look who it is. And I had no idea who it was. So I was really polite.
Yeah.
And I talked to him. I was a polite little kid. And he invited me to come sit with him.
Cool.
So I watched the cycling with Rocket Richard.
Ah.
This was the time. Can you imagine not having a picture of that?
Yeah.
In today's age, can you imagine not bothering to take a picture of sitting next to one of hockey's greatest players ever?
And then you'd be like, sorry, Rocket. I'm going to turn the camera, and I want to take it this way, and then this way. And oh, let me take a look at the photo. Your eyes are closed. Let me take another one.
Oh, look, my little child is sitting with one of the greatest hockey players ever, just randomly. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
I love the Olympics, and I've got a lot of work to do. So this is, like, to me, the Olympics are definitive background sports watching.
Yeah.
You just put them on. It's like the March Madness tournaments that way, too.
Yeah.
You're not going to watch every second of every game.
No.
But it's just always on. It's comforting. I love that.
Well, the hockey, both men's and the women's, when the Canadian women and the American women are facing off, that I will PVR if I can't watch it live. That, for me, is must watch. But beyond that, I'm just not an Olympic guy. You can't be in everything, Bob.
My wife worked for the Olympics. She worked for the CTV group. She was the managing editor of features. So,
yeah,
you know, we have so many connections back to the Olympics in our family. And I think what I really love about it, I kind of alluded to this just a few moments ago, take away the national stakes and all that stuff. It's just that it's always on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like seeing a matinee
or
watching a movie. You know what it is? It's watching a movie on an airplane.
Yeah.
There are no bad movies on airplanes because the alternative is staring out the window or listening to some clown yammer in your ear for 4 hours.
Next time I'll put a list together of movies that I saw on a plane that I had to turn off. They were so bad.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Never turned off a movie. I've watched anything. Yeah. I'll even watch the freaking map where the little plane is going tiny.
That one I'll always watch. Bob, we are out of time.
Are we out of time?
We are out of time.
So next time I have to talk about my theory, how Canada is like Spider-Man, but the United States is like Dr. Doom.
See, that's a perfect tease. That is coming up on Thursday. Spider-Man versus Dr. Doom. Canada versus the United States.
You know
what?
It's actually perfect because it'll start the Olympics, so we'll have a big nationalism discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, maybe what I'll do is I'll do the comic book equivalent, character equivalent to different nations around the world.
That would be great. If you want to do that, that's awesome. I love that. Stick around for that on Thursday. Plus, Bob will tell you why patriotism is the bee's knees, because he loves it. And again, go to our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, at jeffpollock.com and cgiant, cgiant.ca. Use the discount code Bob and Matt. Easy to spell. Bob, a fun Monday, sir.
Always good, Matty. Chick-chicka.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.